Would like to call to order this meeting of the House of Commons Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs and International Development. We are here meeting this morning on Bill S-240, an act to amend the Criminal Code and the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, trafficking in human organs. This morning, we have the sponsor in the House of this bill, MP Garnet Jennis, who's going to be providing us some testimony, and then we'll be hearing some questions from members. And I think, given that there's a lot of interest in this bill in the room, why don't we let MP Jennis get right on with his testimony, and we can open it up to the floor. Please proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, colleagues. At the outset, I'd like to start by recognizing the work of Senator Atulajan on this bill, as well as others who have proposed similar bills. Mr. Yashnevsky, who's here, who got this ball rolling 10 years ago, as well as Erwin Kotler, who for all of his work and support throughout this process. Now, this bill proposes to make it a criminal offense for a Canadian to go abroad to receive an organ without proper consent. And it creates a mechanism by which someone can be deemed inadmissible to Canada if they have been involved in organ harvesting. This touches on a number of different kinds of situations. It seeks to respond to the situation in China, where the taking of vital organs from live and often awake political prisoners is state policy. It also responds to situations where organs are taken through coercion and exploitation beyond the reach of even well-meaning local authorities. Now, in the 10 minutes I have, I don't see it necessary to repeat in detail all aspects of this issue that have already been part of the parliamentary record, that organ harvesting is a problem, that Parliament has a legitimate right and indeed moral obligation to respond to it, and that the application of extraterritorial jurisdiction in this case is appropriate. These are all points that have been well laid out already in the context of the parliamentary debate, but I'd obviously be happy to revisit them during the question period. I wanted to, during this time I have, make a few particular points about the impact and timing of this legislation. Now, first, on the issue of the impact, there has been some debate in the House about whether certain provisions of this bill are necessary and whether certain provisions of the bill are onerous. One member argued that the inadmissibility provision of the legislation might not be necessary because those involved in organ harvesting could be deemed inadmissible on other grounds. Another member wondered if the criminal law aspects could be inferred into other statutes. Some members said that there are no known cases of this in Canada. And one member argued that prosecutions under this legislation could be onerous because they would involve the requirement that prosecutors gather evidence in other jurisdictions. Now, I disagree with many of these arguments. I argued in response that extraterritorial prosecutions are easier in this case because the recipient brings back some physical evidence with them and there's aftercare involved. I pointed out that while any organ harvesting that took place in Canada would already be illegal, this legislation creates a new mechanism by which that crime could be prosecuted if it took place in another country. So the presence or absence of documented cases of organ harvesting here in Canada is really beside the point. I do not believe that any provision of this legislation is redundant or unnecessary. The extraterritoriality provisions are key, but there are other aspects of the criminal law provisions that are substantive and new and important. But I would just say as well, suppose that I'm wrong. Suppose that the bill is in fact challenging to administer in points and it's redundant in its impact. If that is the case, then it may not do that much good, but it also won't do any harm. Note that prosecutions can only proceed under this legislation if authorized by the Attorney General. So if a prosecution is too onerous in a particular case, there simply isn't a need to authorize it in that particular case. The requirement for authorization is a strong check to ensure that these powers are not executed in an unreasonable way or in a way that runs contrary to the public interest. And if the immigration provisions are redundant, which I don't think they are, but if they are, so what? Who's made worse off by the extra emphasis around inadmissibility? One thing that nobody will deny about the passage of this bill is that it would send a strong message about Parliament's and Canada's commitment to fighting forced organ harvesting. So my point, colleagues, would be that at worst, this is a bill that its most extreme critics would say has low impact. I don't agree with those critics, but even if they're right, we lose nothing by passing this legislation. At worst, it's a symbolic positive impact, but at best, it will save the lives of some of the most vulnerable women, men, and children by cutting off the demand for harvested organs. If we can get other countries to follow suit on this initiative, then this will have orders of magnitude more impact on the lives of some of the world's most disadvantaged people. So whether you believe that the impact of passing this bill will be large or small, I hope you will support its swift passage. Now, on the issue of timing, members know that we are in an election year. This bill has been working its way through the process for the majority of this parliamentary session. Getting a substantive private member's bill across the finish line is not a quick or an easy thing to do, and that explains why multiple great bills on this topic over the last 10 years did not make it all the way through. If we don't get this done, then how much longer will victims have to wait? 4 more years? 10 more years? I say let's do everything we can to maximize the speed of passage of this bill so that we can look our children in the eye and tell them that we didn't just talk about good ideas, but we actually got good things done. I'm grateful to this committee and to you, Mr. Chair, for the fact that we're proceeding quickly to clause-by-clause consideration. Now, clause-by-clause will provide members with the opportunity to propose amendments. I note that this bill was studied by the Senate committee and substantially and constructively amended at that point, and it builds on detailed legal work, which includes the work of, as I mentioned, former Minister of Justice Erwin Kotler. Now, if members see a vital need to amend this bill before passing, then certainly they're in their rights to do so, and I think there would still be a shot of getting the bill passed before the next election. However, as colleagues know, if this bill is passed in present form, it will go straight to royal assent, and we will then have certainly delivered for victims and their families. If the bill is amended and it goes back to the Senate with no guarantee that the Senate will like our new revisions, I think that will complicate the process. Now, the Senate's rules are different from ours, and this close to the federal election, all that would be required is for one senator to choose to adjourn the debate in their name, and that would, I think, prevent it from proceeding. Now, under different circumstances, I probably would have proposed minor amendments myself today. But we have to take stock of the circumstance we're in with a clock ticking hard. My sincere recommendation would be that we pass this bill in present form and therefore ensure that it makes it moves forward before the next election. And if members want to propose amendments, I hope that they've been able to do substantial consultation with the Senate to ensure that the Senate would give quick passage to the amended version. If we got this bill, as some appear interested in doing, then we're obviously a lot worse off. But even if we marginally strengthen it, we likely will also be worse off if we are not able to get it done before the next election. So I would suggest we consider supporting this bill without amendment so that we can ensure we deliver the justice that we want for victims. In this case, we have a gaping hole in the law that allows Canadians to be complicit in a grievous violation of human rights. Our human rights architecture in this case is like a ship with a gaping hole in the side. Recognizing the urgency of the situation, I say that we need to ensure that that hole is patched, and if we subsequently need to make improvements to the patchwork, so be it. If this committee agrees to pass this bill in present form today or this week, then our chances of getting it into law before the end of this parliament are very high. There have been 4 bills on this over 10 years, and this represents the culmination of work done by some of the best human rights minds in the world, people like Erwin Kotler, David Matus, and David Kilgore. Now, let me close with a bit of a personal note. Members know, I think, that my grandmother was a Holocaust survivor. She avoided capture. She avoided the torture of the concentration camps, despite her lack of privilege, because there were people in her community with more privilege than she had who were willing to protect her and to speak out for justice when and where possible. Now, as members of Parliament, of able to sit here, we all have a form of privilege, and we can choose to use that privilege to speak for ourselves, for our interests and the interests of our tribe, or we can use that privilege to speak for those who do not have a voice, for the poor and suffering of the world, like my grandmother in her time, who could not speak to a Parliament or a committee about her situation. We can be a voice for ourselves, or we can be a voice for the voiceless. Now, I think of the fact that today in the People's Republic of China, we have Uyghur Muslims being put in concentration camps, churches exploded with dynamite, and many others being killed for their organs. A couple years ago, I was in Berlin, and I spent time exploring the history and the memorials related to the Holocaust. It hit home for me seeing the crowded urban areas from which Jews were shipped by train to concentration camps. It hit home for me that people saw what was going on. I visited Sachsenhausen outside of Berlin, which is in the heart of one of Berlin's suburbs. Many of these atrocities were not well hidden. Ordinary people saw them, knew about them, and did not do enough to stop them. So why didn't they stop them? Too often, I think, people excuse themselves from doing what is necessary to stop injustice by whataboutisms. That is, they get hung up on small, minor details or irrelevant facts that distract their attention from the big picture of injustice being done against the innocent. About the horrors of the slave trade, William Wilberforce said, "You may choose to look away, but you may never again say that you did not know." So I say to committee members, you know, you have read, you have heard the stories about the contemporary horrors of human rights abuses, the horrors of organ harvesting and trafficking, and the complicity of some Canadians. We must do all we can to put a stop to this. Let's pass this bill to ensure that it becomes law as soon as possible. Let's maximize our chances of success by recognizing the legislative process as it is and just like William Wilberforce's audience. You and all of those watching at home may choose to look away, but can never again say they did not know. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, MP Genuis. Your commitment on this file certainly comes through in your words, and we appreciate that. I would now like to move straight into questions, and we're going to begin with MP Abeltaith, please.
Good morning, and thank you, Garnet, for sponsoring this bill, this legislation, and congratulations on your efforts. I believe this is a very, very important bill, and I hope it will pass, as I know it will make a difference for thousands of people out there. I also know that you are passionate about this bill, and you have introduced a similar legislation, Bill C-350. It is in your mind, and I know it's on your agenda. So do you believe that your legislation, the C-350, is it a complementary to S-240, or will this piece of legislation provide the protection you had in mind in Bill C-350? Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the question. So I put forward Bill C-350 in Parliament. Bill S-240 is a very similar bill Senator Toulajan put forward in the Senate. These, though slightly different in some of the details, these bills are substantively do the same thing. So, no, the design was never for both of the bills to pass. It was recognizing just the difference in process that there are certain aspects of the Senate rules and the House of Commons rules that create different opportunities to move the bills forward at different times.
Okay. Now, it seems like the main reasons of organ harvesting and trafficking, it's the lack of legal donors out there. And I'm an advocate of legal donors, of living donors, whether for tissues or for organs. Now, S-240 can really assist with the demand that out there for organs by explicitly prohibiting the organ trafficking and creating consequences for the for those who attempt to commit these acts. Now, do you believe in this instance that the government of Canada could make a meaningful difference by working with the provinces to address the supply side as well through national organ registry as been presented before by myself under C-223 and further within from two other members?
Well, thank you very much. That's an excellent question. So when we have a case where a Canadian goes abroad to receive an organ for which there isn't consent, we recognize that is feeding and supporting a great evil, which is organs being taken from people forcibly without consent. And we need legislative mechanisms, as we're discussing today, to stop that. But I think it is reasonable, it is important to also think about the circumstances that put somebody in that desperate situation, which is as a result of a limit of supply of organs. And that is why I was pleased to support your private members initiative on this. And thank you for your good work. And I was pleased to support as well and speak in favor of the private members bill from our colleague Len Weber that would have improved access to Mr. Weber's bill puts on the tax forms the opportunity to indicate that you're an organ donor. And this facilitates as well that increase in supply. And I was very pleased to see Mr. Weber's bill receive strong support from all parties. So there is an interest in coming at this issue from a number of different angles. It's that old question of fighting crime and fighting the causes of crime, right? I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. I think we can and should do both. So hopefully by coming at it in both directions, we maximize our chances of success here.
Well, thank you. I think, this bill can really speak to many different areas, and I think can hit many targets. And one of them, I mean, to the best interest is organ donations. And I think, I hope that the spirit of supporting the two other bills that are already in the House from the government side, from all sides, to carry forward with this one. And I would take this opportunity to call on support for this by all sides and to make sure that we have this opportunity to hit more than one bird by one stone and make sure that we get the result we need. So I'll leave it to you to make final comment on this area, because to me it's very, very important angle to tackle this bill through. And I think it's something that we should pay a lot of attention, and we should make it obvious to all members that this is also a very, very important element in this bill.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your comments and for your support. Those questions were tough but fair. So thank you for that. I thought maybe if you'll allow me just to add one issue on the inadmissibility provisions that I neglected to mention during my introductory remarks, and that is that the provisions around inadmissibility to Canada in the Immigration Act right now deal with criminality, gross criminality, as grounds for inadmissibility. But in some cases, when we deal with organ harvesting, there's cases of people that are not breaking any law in the country where they are, but they're still involved in a gross violation of human rights. And that is one of the reasons why I think that those immigration provisions that are part of this legislation are very important, that somebody could be acting as they are directed, carrying out terrible human rights abuses in a country like China, where this is a matter of state policy. That person, I believe, should still be able to be considered under the inadmissibility provisions because they're involved in a gross violation of human rights. So that's an important area where this law is advancing the discussion forward. It's not there are cases, yes, where somebody would be involved in organ harvesting who is also breaking the law in the country where they are, and that person could be considered inadmissible on both grounds. But there are certainly cases where the new provisions are necessary. So I'll just add that in addition to my comments at the beginning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are now going to move to MP Chesnevsky, please.
Thank you, Chair. And let me begin by thanking Mr. Jenness for sponsoring this legislation. And he's already mentioned the long journey that has brought us here. In fact, it's been 11 years. It was on February 5th, 2005, C-500 in the 39th Parliament, that it was first introduced by myself. So I'm feeling very expectant and anxious. I believe that we can get this through our committee this week. And this could be a great example in difficult circumstances in the House of parliamentarians doing what's right on a very important file. We have support of all parties. We have the support of both chambers within our parliament. It's a rare occasion that we see this type of support. And it will be a demonstration of the legislature and legislators doing their work, and importantly, vital work. You mentioned the great work done by the two Davids, David Mattis and David Kilgore. They really shone a light in perhaps the darkest of evils of our current times. Perhaps not in the same way as you see in cases of genocide, but there was something to what you said when you referenced your grandmother. It hasn't been since World War II that we've seen human horrors on an industrial scale by a state, a government, China, on an industrial scale, taking the most vulnerable. People have been incarcerated for their beliefs and profiting from a systemic system put in place to literally cannibalize the bodies of those vulnerable individuals. I won't have so much a question as, so you're going to get some more tough questions, as you referenced. It won't be so much as a question, but to further provide context why it's so important for us to do this. 12 years ago, this first became an issue, and it's the confluence of a number of things that have happened globally. Medical technology wouldn't have allowed for these sorts of transplantations 20, 30 years ago. So it was a change in medical technology. And then this global disparity. You have people of the wealthy West, and you have, it's not just China, but destitute farmers in India falling victim to this type of trafficking. Orphans, 17-year-old orphans in Ukraine falling victim. So the most vulnerable globally are the victims of this horrific trade in human organs. And if people say that, well, that's far away, it doesn't affect us, it does. And in ways perhaps that need reminding. Soon after, I think it was the week after I introduced the legislation, February 5th of 2008, the Toronto Star had headline stories about Dr. Horror from Brampton, who had lived in a mansion, had a very good life here in Canada, and had a series of clinics in India that preyed upon the most vulnerable. Farmers who were destitute were promised significant amounts of money, didn't always receive them, weren't necessarily explained that you can only donate one kidney and not two. So I'd like to conclude my statement of support by saying this is a horrific trade. All of the trends that have led to this trade are increasing. The income disparities, the number of vulnerable, medical technology, and we should be a leader. We can be an example for other countries by passing this legislation. So I thank you, and I have a minute and a half left if you'd like to comment on any of the statements I've made. Thank you.
Thank you so much again, Mr. Yashnevsky, for your comments and your work on this. I do want to make sure that people watching this don't get the impression that just because we've been agreeing so far that this is going to be easy, right? It's February, parliamentary session goes till June, and there's details that are part of the discussion. So the continuing engagement of people at home, the decisions we make about how to move forward are critical. So sometimes even if there's facial agreement, there's still a lot of hard work. So people shouldn't be complacent, even though they're seeing agreement. But it's good to see that agreement. And I think we have an opportunity, as you say, of parties to work together. February of 2005 was a long time ago. It was a longer time ago for me. I was in high school at that time. So hopefully my kids won't be in high school before we get this done. Right. And just in the remaining time, you know, Boris, you raise this issue of I think it's a critical one, of injustice in an interconnected world, right? In a more and more globalized, interconnected world, there are opportunities for exploitation and injustice. There are lots of great opportunities that come from interconnectedness, but there are opportunities for injustice and exploitation. And I believe that's why we need to be willing to use more extraterritorial provisions. We did this in child sex tourism when it came to light that people were going overseas and engaging in this horrific practice of child rape, essentially, that we said, in an interconnected world, we need new legal tools that respond to new forms of injustice. And that means prosecuting people for terrible things that they do overseas, even if they're not doing those things within our country. And this is an extension of that principle. And an important issue for this committee to explore in general is countering injustice in a more and more interconnected world where people aren't just exploiting others at home, but they might be involved in exploiting others overseas. And that will require a creative ways of thinking, new legal tools, and we can't just be complacent and think the tools of yesteryear have kept up with the current trends in terms of travel and technology. They haven't, and that's why we need to be adaptable as well.
Thank you very much. We shall now move to MP Ramsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee for having me this morning in replacement of my colleague, Madame Laverdière, who couldn't be here this morning. But I think it's clear that the NDP supports this effort and really hopes for that swift passage as well, given the timeline that we're up against, which you've highlighted well. Also, you know, that we strongly oppose the trafficking and the abhorrent treatment of those who are manipulated and abused and exploited for their organs globally. You know, is of significant concern to New Democrats as well. So we do hope that this moves swiftly. You know, you mentioned some domestic issues, right, that are a struggle. And I, like many Canadians, have a family member who is a donor recipient, thankfully, here at home. But that limited availability that has people seeking, you know, organs globally has become a legitimate issue for us. And I know that my colleague, Mr. Aboulteif, raised the domestic attempts at us trying to address the organ shortage that we have. And so I have a question for you along that line. Do you agree that the Government of Canada should consider the feasibility of a presumed consent organ system, or consent system rather, for organ donation, where individuals opt out instead of opting in, which some of the legislation I think is attempting to address? So I'll ask that first.
Mr. Ramsey, thank you for your question, and thank you for the support of the NDP. I know Ms. Laverdière and Ms. Hardcastle and others that have been engaged in discussions around this, as well as Mr. Rankin, your justice critic, and he gave an excellent speech on this issue in the House, and appreciate your presence and your commitment on this as well. You know, in terms of some of the particulars around organ donation, I mean, it's a bit outside of the scope of the things I've been sort of most embedded in thinking about the testimony for today. I will say, in terms of a presumed consent model, there are many things we could do short of presumed consent that I think would substantially increase the availability of organs. We haven't yet, there's been a lot of discussion about it in this parliament, but we haven't yet ventured down the road at all of what Sunstein and Thaler would call nudges in the direction of increased donation. Those nudges, the adjusting of the choice architecture, things like what my colleague Len Weber had proposed in a private member's bill, to have people on their tax forms indicate yes or no whether they're going to be an organ donor, to have people be automatically, in certain kinds of situations like filling out their taxes, presented with the choice, things like a national organ donation registry, greater public information. You know, I think some people would have concerns about presumed consent as from a personal liberty standpoint. I think there are a lot of things we can do before we have that discussion that might solve the problem as it is. So my inclination would be to take those steps first, and then we'll see what the impact of those steps are. Again, I mean, that's not a particularly well thought out response, because it's maybe outside of my outside of what my focus was today. But I think it's an interesting discussion. How do we increase organ donations? And obviously, it fits into the broader question.
Yeah, I think it's important, because when Canadians are going abroad seeking organ transplants, seeking treatment that they can't receive here, as our colleague pointed out, they're maybe not given the best medical advice that they could be given. So it is endangering, the lives of Canadians ultimately. And, you spoke about that aftercare when they return home, and kind of all of those pieces. So I do think it fits into, what you're attempting to sponsor here and have happen. The other question that I have is about other countries. Do other countries exercise the extra territorial jurisdiction over trafficking offenses that are related to the removal of human organs? And if so, like, what are some of the best practices that we see globally?
Yes, so other countries do have similar laws. It's kind of interesting how this whole effort was started by Canadians in terms of raising awareness of this. It was David Kilgore and David Matus that did the initial report, and I think it was David Kilgore who's mentioned to me it's a source of a little bit of embarrassment that you have these prominent Canadian experts that have done this work, and it's led to legislation being adopted in other countries, and yet Canada, the source country of these great experts who have done this work, has yet to pass legislation. So I know Israel, I believe Spain, Taiwan have passed legislation on this. I believe other jurisdictions have as well. I was just flipping for the list of countries in my notes, and maybe it'll come to me later on. But I know Israel, Taiwan have passed legislation. I believe Spain has as well. And I hope that by Canada doing it, we can kind of increase that global momentum towards getting more countries on board.
So can you speak then to what the impact of legislation has been in those countries?
Well, you know, in general, where this has taken place, there's more awareness. It doesn't happen in the same way, the same levels. I know the story from Israel was it was a doctor who kind of started this process there, because he had a patient who came to him and said they were going to a particular other country to receive a heart transplant, and it was scheduled for a specific day in the future, and noting his, you know, his understanding of medicine, he said, "Wait, it's not really possible to know that a heart is going to be available." And it was through that it was unearthed that, well, probably somebody is having their life taken in order to have that transplant taken place. And so it's a big part of this battle is awareness, but also that disincentive. And so I think that's something we're seeing in those countries is an increased awareness and the disincentive that's there. But it's still a relatively small number of countries that have gone down this road. So it's still relatively new efforts. I think we'll see greater impacts over more countries and over more time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. MP Vandenbilt, please.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Genuis, for putting this incredibly important bill forward, and others before you, Mr. Wisniewski and others. And I'd just like to reassure you that we absolutely support. I have 100% support for what you are doing. It is a long time coming. I think that illegal organ trafficking is probably one of the vilest and most inhumane, worst forms of trafficking and of crimes that are happening internationally. And Canada should be leading the world in this regard. And we also share your urgency in terms of the need to make sure that we get legislation passed on this. So I would just like to ask you, in terms of the international community, we know in the Subcommittee on Human Rights, we heard from Uyghur testimony that said that they're being asked for DNA samples, which raises a very dark specter of why are they being asked for DNA samples. The UN Office on Drugs and Crime is saying that armed groups and terrorist groups are now using trafficking, including organ trafficking, as a means of funding their terrorist activities. No Canadian, I believe, would ever want to receive an organ from somebody where the person was either murdered or was extorted or coerced. I think this is something we all know is absolutely wrong. So could you tell the committee what are the trends internationally? Is this a problem that is increasing? Is this a problem that is getting worse? Is it spreading? What are the international trends?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for your question, for your support, Ms. Vandenbilt. I found where I was looking in my notes, and it fits well within your question to say that countries that have passed similar legislation, I mentioned Israel, Spain, and Taiwan, but also Italy and Norway. So some other examples to look at in terms of similar legislation being enacted. And, you know, I think you outlined very well in your comments what the international trends are. What we see with China is sophisticated, well-organized abuse of human rights. And I think it's sort of a a stereotype in our language that is false, where we tend to associate technological development, so-called civilization, with moral improvement. Those things do not go together in any sort of automatic sense at all, right? So when we look at China, we see the systematization of gross violation of human rights. I know the parliamentary secretary who's here and I have the honor of working together on the Canada-Tibet Parliamentary Friendship Group. So he's very aware of that in that context. I know, as well as in other contexts in China, you mentioned the situation with Uyghurs, the collection of DNA samples. So there's a lot. At the same time as we see this going on, of course, these things aren't sort of publicly advertised in terms of exactly what they're doing, right? It does take the detailed work of people like David Matus and David Kilgore to unearth it. The link to terrorist financing, all of these things are emerging and growing problems. And they are part of what I referred to earlier in response to Mr. Yashnevsky's question, the changing impacts of injustice in an interconnected world. And we need to do all we can to make sure that we are not being in any way complicit in this. And I think your comments about terrorist financing underline, I think, another issue here, which is the security dimension of this, right? So I'm not the sort of person that thinks that everything has to be denominated in terms of security. Human rights is enough of a reason for me, right? But I think recognizing the security impacts as well of this, when you have this very, very strong potential revenue stream for extremist and dangerous organizations, that has an impact on our own security as well.
Okay. There are Canadians, particularly diaspora communities, who, if they need an organ, a lot of their family members are abroad, or there are dual citizens who may go to their home country where there might be things that are perfectly legal in order to get organs. Is there anything in this bill that would preclude somebody from being able to do something like that?
Great question. This bill does not in any way seek to restrict people from receiving organs from abroad if there is consent. The requirement is that they don't receive organs from abroad if there is not consent. Bill C-350, which was a bill I proposed, but it was wholly the same as a bill proposed by Erwin Kotler. It envisioned a system where somebody would bring a certificate with them attesting to that consent. I think, you know, there's some potential value in that, but there's also some complexity around that, around assessing the validity of a certificate and countries where that just may not happen as a matter of course. So the way this legislation is set up is it would be incumbent on the prosecution to demonstrate, based on a typical standard of proof that there was exploitation, that there wasn't proper consent. So does that mean that there are cases where someone might be involved in organ trafficking and it's difficult to prove? It's difficult to get a conviction. Well, yes, that's something that prosecutors deal with every day. But certainly the chances that somebody who simply innocently went abroad and received an organ for which there was consent, doing so in another jurisdiction which has the rule of law, or receiving from a family member, the risk that that person would get caught up in a prosecution here is totally nil. If anything, the risk is greater the other way, that someone would do something nefarious and not get caught in a prosecution. But at least it's better to have this law than not have this law, even though we're not going to be able to successfully prosecute every case. Again, that's true of any law.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that brings us to the end of the questions for you, MP Genois, and we really do appreciate you being here. I think you're hearing from all sides at the table that there is an acknowledgement and an importance of the importance of this particular bill. And you're right; it's about doing the hard work now to ensure a path forward that will see it successfully passed. So, with that, I'm going to suspend. We have David Matus joining us at 9:45 by teleconference. So we will suspend, and then as soon as we've got that lined up, we will come back online.
Okay.
Suspend.
Thank you.
Resuming. Thank you, colleagues, for that. Just as we were getting set up for David Mattis. David, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us this morning. David Mattis is a lawyer. He's the senior legal counsel for B'nai B'rith, and he is a subject expert and longtime advocate on the issue of human trafficking, organ trafficking. And we're very pleased to have him join us this morning from Winnipeg by phone. Mr. Mattis, if I can ask you please to provide testimony, and then we will certainly open things up to questions from members, which I know there's quite a few.
Sure. Now, I've had some prior discussions about the bill with some of you, and there have been three different issues that have been raised. The issue of compulsory reporting, consideration for payment, and body parts other than organs. So let me say a bit about each of those issues. The issue about compulsory reporting is an issue where there was a constitutional question raised about because the bill now says reporting to a designated authority. And I looked at the definition of attorney general in the criminal code, because the bill says there has to be consent by the attorney general. And the phrase attorney general in the criminal code is defined to include or to mean the attorney general or solicitor general for the province in which proceedings are taken. And it's the attorney general for Canada, only for Yukon, Nunavut, and the Northwest Territories. So that issue of constitutionality, as I see it, can be answered in one of four ways. One is just to leave the bill as it is and leave the issue of who the designated authority is to the governor and council. And the governor and council could, in theory, in consultation with the provinces, designate provincial authorities for each province where the attorney general has the power, or solicitor general has the power, to consent to prosecution. So that would be one option. A second would be to change the bill to require the consent of the Attorney General of Canada, as opposed to just the Attorney General, so that would allow for the designated authority to be federal. A third answer would be to change the consent requirement, as does exist in some parts of the criminal code, to be either the Attorney General of Canada or the Attorney General or Solicitor General of the province, which would maximize flexibility in terms of designation of the relevant authority. And the fourth possibility is to change the bill to require, instead of saying reporting by an authority designated by the governing council, to require reporting to the Attorney General. And that would mean the Attorney General as defined in the criminal code, which would mean reporting to the Attorney General or Solicitor General in each province where proceedings might be taken. And I point out that's a common form of reporting, that a lot of the there's a lot of reporting legislation right now in Canada for child abuse, for gunshot wounds, and a lot of this reporting goes straight to the prosecutorial authorities. So those are the options that I saw for the first issue about reporting. In terms of consideration, the issue that has arisen is whether the bill as it now stands would penalize compensation to the donor for expenses incurred or income lost. There's, again, a couple of ways to deal with that. One is just to leave it to prosecutorial discretion and the consent of the Attorney General and not change the bill. A second is to have specific wording. Instead of saying consideration, say consideration for the purpose of exploitation, which is the language used right now in the Declaration of Istanbul in organ trafficking and transplant tourism. And it's a well-known concept in the criminal code, exploitation. It's mentioned 36 times now in the criminal code. In particular, it's part of the offense of trafficking of persons in the criminal code. The third issue is that I heard raised was the issue of body parts, whether the reference to organs is too narrow and whether the bill should also refer to tissue. And if the bill were amended to refer to tissue, the question would arise whether that's too broad and some forms of tissue need to be exempted. So, again, there's more than one answer. One, again, is to do nothing because the fact that something more can be done that is worthwhile is not an argument for doing something which isn't itself worthwhile, which is the bill right now. A second is to add tissue, but to rely on the concept of exploitation to avoid overbreadth. Presumably, consideration for those tissue which the bill would not intend to capture would not be consideration for the purpose of exploitation. The third option is to add tissue, but exempt specific tissue listed by regulation. But there would have to be, I would think, medical consultation to determine which tissue would fall within the regulation. So those are the various issues I heard discussed and the various options I present for your consideration. I realize there's a strategic consideration involved because if there's an amendment, then it has to go to back to the Senate, and in theory, any one senator could delay passage of the bill through the Senate with amendment. But I feel in terms of strategic considerations, you're a better place to deal with them than I am, so I leave that to your wisdom. So those are